Blog Talk Radio.
No!
Good afternoon, dear saints of God. Good afternoon, and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with the one and only Sister Marie. That song was entitled Let Revival Come, and that's that Charity Gale Gang. Maybe Sister Marie can tell us a little bit more about who they are. I know Charity Gale, those are her buddies. It's a bunch of young people who are just worshiping the Lord the way I used to do some 40 years ago. Now I'm an old fogey. Now I'm an old guy. I'm an old man in a chair, barking and yelling like an old dog on a porch. And they have already put me out to pasture. So without any further ado, let me bring on my sister. And how you doing today?
I'm good, Dr. Coleman, the old
yes.
man in the chair.
That's right. Well, he's not the only old man in the chair. There's a bunch of old men in chairs everywhere across America. Some have remotes. Some have fly swatters. It all depends. It all depends, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That describes me. I'm an old man in the chair.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. My daughter Maggie the other day told me, I didn't know I had a grandfather for a dad. I said, what? What did you say? Yeah, you're acting like a grandpa. I didn't know I had an old dad like a grandpa.
Oh.
I said, march into your room. March
Absolutely.
Into your room. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
oh,
yeah.
Dear.
Yeah. So that's,
well, that's
it.
Kids.
That's it. That's kids for
yeah.
you. That's kids. Well, it's
yeah.
beautiful in my neck of the woods. We've had beautiful weather now for 3 days since Sunday. We've been having very, very nice, mild,
mm-hmm.
sunny weather. And, I was looking for a T-shirt that I have. I have a T-shirt I bought at Walmart, and it has Snoopy the dog. And
yeah.
and Snoopy the dog says, no work today. I'm not working today. I can't find that
exactly.
T-shirt. I've been trying to find it because I want to put it on to send subliminal messages to the people around this family not to have me do things. Now. They're asking me to go into the attic to go look for the winter the bin that has the winter clothes. What do I know about that? What do I know about bin with winter clothes in them?
Check. You should check the dust rags to see if your T-shirt's in there. Because you know
exactly.
how you cut those up.
Right.
That one could have bit the dust by now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's a lot going on in the world today, a lot of crazy stuff going on
mm-hmm.
in the world. We live in a crazy world. This is a crazy country.
Yep.
Everything that's supposed to be forward is backwards, and everything that's backwards is forward. So we live
mm-hmm.
in a very, the idiots are running the country. And that's all I can say. I mean, that's pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
What I can say, that's what's going on. So let's see what, it's not going to get any better. That's
no.
for sure. It's not going to get any better. So,
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you have your Bible handy today? Because I want to ask you to look up a couple things.
I have my Bible.
I know you
right
have.
Here.
You have one
yeah.
in every room.
Right, yeah.
I know that. So yeah. I just wanted to ask you that before I get started. Oh, I want to make an announcement, too, by the way.
Sure.
My show here on Tuesday is going to move to Thursday starting next week. It's going to be at the same time, exception of Thanksgiving weekend, which is the 25th. I'll be on Tuesday then.
Right.
So I'll do the show on Tuesday that week. And thank you for accommodating me, my brother. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Listen, that's it. I'm in the accommodation business. I have to, you know, that's what happens when you become an old man. They push you around, right? One day they're going to say, okay, old man, you're going to the nursing home, you know, and that's it. So
you're out of here.
I'm out of here, right? That's it. Listen, I'm more than happy to accommodate
thank you.
So we'll move it to Thursdays, and then, the show goes on.
We'll see how that works out. We'll see how that works out, and you know. So,
absolutely.
You know, we all have families and obligations and things, so that might work out better, I think, for the time being anyway.
Sure,
So we'll see. We'll see.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to let everyone know, because you said to remind you to do that or to remember to do that, and I made myself a note just in case.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I forget. I mean, we did Sister AJ's 150th show, and I was so preoccupied with that procedure I was going to go have done at the doctor and who was going to catch me, because I'm running. I'm saying, catch me if you can. And, of course, they caught me. So I forgot to mention that it was her 150th show. It was a nice milestone for her. And I just forget things because, again, I'm just, like I said, I'm doing this show right now, but I was already been told I have to look for the bin that has the winter clothes. So at 3:00 Eastern Standard Time, as soon as I open the door to the studio, they're going to be right there looking at me. As soon as I open the door, they're going to be right there. Okay, we're ready to go look for it. So, which means
doing the show today, then.
Right, which means I have to do it. When they say they're going to do it, it means I have to do it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But I have a great family. I can't complain.
You can't.
My wife and kids are just exceptional.
Absolutely.
So I gotta find,
and you're a perfect match, by the way.
That's
you're a perfect match.
That's right. I got to find my Snoopy shirt. That's all I'm saying. I got to find my Snoopy shirt.
Check the rag bag.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
So we have a nice show today. Oh,
yeah.
Listen.
Okay.
Listen. Yeah, listen. Either that or go look in the recyclable bin, or go look in the vacuum cleaner. It might be in there. Because after they shredded it, they ran the vacuum cleaner over it to make it disappear in the bag. Hey, there's all kinds of little games, all kinds of little things
or
that they do.
It could be where you put it last. That's another option.
Well, when I put it last in the hamper. I put it last in the hamper. It's not there.
Okay.
And the thing is, it smells already, because I haven't taken it off, because every day I'm trying to tell them, the doctor said, remember, I have 2 weeks off. Remember, you can't forget that.
Oh, yeah.
After that
procedure,
and the anesthesia, the anesthesia lingers for 2 weeks. And that's why I had the shirt on, and my wife says, you need to take it off because, you've been wearing it every day.
You wore a Snoopy shirt to the
I wore it. I wore it after I got back.
Oh, okay.
I wore it. Yeah. But
I wouldn't have been able to quit laughing.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. But that's it. That's it.
Sunday
it's somewhere. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So. But
well,
pretty
I'm sure
soon
you'll find it.
Yeah, pretty soon the shoveling's going to start. So, so much for the Snoopy shirt can't help me then. So that's
I think
it.
That's a week from now, by the way, a week or so. I think we might see a little bit of snow. It's in the forecast. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm hoping we don't see any. I'm hoping we don't see any snow.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not thrilled.
I'm already tired of it, and it hasn't fallen yet.
Yes.
I'm already tired.
It's going to be a long winter.
I'm tired thinking about it. I just get tired thinking about it.
Oh, boy. You are the old man in the chair now.
That's
Jeez.
It. That's it. That's it. That's
wow.
It. Yep.
Wow.
That's it.
Okay. Well, today we're going to continue with our audio by James Lindsay of New Discourses, and it's titled Antonio Gramsci, Cultural Marxism, Wokeness, Leninism 4.0. That's a big title.
Sure.
I think the description in the podcast says it best, so I'll read that in part. It says, if you want to understand the present movement, especially how similar wokeness seems to Mao's cultural revolution, you have to understand the Italian communist Antonio Gramsci. Gramsci wrote a series of essays and books while imprisoned by the Italian fascists in the 1920s and 1930s that are referred to as the prison notebooks. These are the birthplace of cultural Marxism, which Lindsay argues has evolved into identity Marxism ever since. So once you understand Gramsci, you'll easily understand what's going on in our society at present and understand more clearly why, more than ever, this needs to be avoided, if possible. I mean, it's all around us, so I don't know how to avoid it, I guess, unless we do it on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you learn last week from this? Is there anything you've learned?
Well, that history has a way of repeating itself, and that everything that happens today was planted years ago. It's like an apple tree that's giving apples today. Somebody had to plant that tree years ago. So this guy planted these ideas, and now they're bearing fruit in this society in this day and age.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And like him in his day who was planting these seeds, there are people planting those seeds today. Where are they doing it? They're doing it in our public schools. They're doing it among our children. They're doing it among our young people, our teenagers. They're doing it, in the universities. They're planting these seeds. So we're in for trouble. We're in for trouble.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And, what's interesting, this is what's interesting. In another show that you did, we learned that Karl Marx was a misfit, a bum, a loser, a
he
freeloader.
He lived in his mother's house.
Yep. Right? A freeloader, okay? We learned that Adolf Hitler was a bum, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a wannabe artist. They looked at his artwork and they said, garbage, go do something else. And then we learned that this guy, this Gramsci guy, he was like a misfit too. So be careful with misfits. Be careful with bums. Just be careful.
That's right.
'Cause they wind up doing terrible things.
Big things. Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're connected to on the internet a lot of times, you know?
Sure.
You have no idea. A lot of people, are connecting. I think it's a social experiment going on with, like, live chats and stuff on YouTube. You know, you can see it.
Right.
How people pit, they throw out a subject. And people pit against it one way or the other, you know.
Right, right.
So you don't know who that person is behind there, throwing this information out. So it's interesting to watch anyway. But they're pitting because they're setting up a society where they judge against you, right? Pitting people against each other.
Sure.
So you see it in live chat, social networks, things like that. You'll see the subject go out, and then you'll see the people, how they react. So it's like a social experiment for what's coming down the pipes, you know, giving us an idea of what's going to happen in the future with us. And you can be drawn into that depending on the subject matter. You know, what is your trigger point?
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, for me, this explains the pressure being, I think last week, put on society to conform them to the vaccines, the mandates, the masks, things like that. You know, the problem's not the pandemic to me, rather a way to usher in a herd mentality. You know, that seems like what they're doing. It's not the pandemic. It's the herd mentality that they're trying to create, because people don't challenge the status quo, but they're getting people to embrace it.
Right.
And the enemy here is common sense. When things don't make any sense, that's the enemy, because they're not designed to, with this, to make any sense at all. You know, that's what I really saw that last week, because we were always saying, well, the community, they're pushing you in the community. You know, that's a hegemony that he's talking about. That's it. It's being swayed a certain way, society, into a herd mentality to do everything, to conform to everything that they put out. And that's what this is. So it's easy to see now, you know, what they're up to. So, and another thing I saw is I can see how easy it will be in the future for these elite leaders to eventually come together and be of one mind and turn their kingdom over to the beast. We're told that'll happen in Scripture. We can see how easy that could happen.
Sure.
Just with the vaccines. And if you have your Bible there, can you look at Revelation 17 and read 12 and 13?
Revelation 17, 12, and 13. Here we go. It reads, and of course, this is the King James Bible, 12 and 13, Revelation 17, 12, and 13. And the ten horns which thou saw are ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast.
Do you see how easy that is? And if we also look at Revelation 17, 17, can you read that?
Sure. It says, for God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled.
Yes.
Wow.
We can see that. We can see that starting. How easy that would be at this point when we have a world. By the way, I think that matches also Ezekiel 38 in the Old Testament. Now, we're not going to read through all Ezekiel 38, but just a side note there if you want to look at that.
Sure.
So that goes along with that. But we can see now how, you know, I can tell you right now, the borders, they're opening up borders, but to enter that border or that country, you have to be vaccinated. Do you see what I'm saying? So these kingdoms have mandated that to come into the country, you're now restricted from going into other countries due to your vaccination status.
Right. In other words,
so,
your real citizenship is not whether you belong to that country or not. Your real citizenship will be based on the vaccine.
Yes, that's a good point. That's exactly it. So are you a part of that or are you a part of that? You know, and eventually it will be narrowed down, but you can clearly see these kingdoms, these leaders, you know, forming together in one mind over this. So that's easy to see. Now, Mr. Lindsay's not a Christian. you know, in the audio. But if I were to sum him up, I thought about it. I would say three things about him. He's a deep thinker. He understands the subject matter, and he's able to articulate it, you know, and articulate this to others well. And I think that's three good attributes that he has. He has done a lot to assist the church to warn them that this was coming down the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
But to my knowledge, he's not a Christian. But yet, he respects, you know,
sure,
Christians enough. I know in the SBC, he went in there and he warned them who these people were that were actually in the church. Some heeded the warning, some did not.
Right.
So, okay. So we're going to start with something just a little bit different that I saw that Hugo Talks put out. The G20, and the title of it is G20, Palace and the Gates of Hell. And we're going
okay.
to listen to that because that will go along with the scripture I just had you read, Revelation
mm-hmm.
17, 12, 13, 17, 17.
Okay.
That will go along with it. This is interesting. You know, so during the G20 summit, it was going on over the pagan holiday of Halloween, you know. So where the Christians are maybe looking at the Reformation and celebrating that or remembering that, the Reformation, they were doing this G20. And, you know, the timing is interesting. So if we consider the scriptures we just read, this is why I found this clip interesting. It's like 8 minutes long.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't think, I'm not sure that Hugo is a Christian, in fact, you know, but he does understand things biblically. But
mm-hmm.
if he can, there, he's limited on what he can say because he's in the United Kingdom, okay?
Right.
How he puts things out. So, but he does seem to find these clips that coincide with scripture. You know,
right, right.
But this meeting was interesting, and I thought I'd let him, you know, tell us about it before we go on to Antonio.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
Here's Hugo Talks, G20 Palace, Gates of Hell.
Hugo Talks. Okay, now this is a... Hello, you're listening to Hugo Talks. Okay, now this is a follow-up to the Halloween video I did yesterday. And if I knew about this yesterday, I would have put it in that video. But this is just another thing to add to the picture. So of course, the G20, all the puppet tyrant Decepticons, all meeting up on October the 30th and the 31st in Rome on Halloween. Biden, Prince Charles, Boris Johnson, Macron, Merkel, all the losers together, and they had this, you know, big meal in this grand room, and I implied that it was unusual for all of this to happen on Halloween, and also the COP26 also starting on that Halloween date. But someone also now has brought this to my attention, the palace that they were all eating that meal in and were also hanging out in is called the Quirinal Palace, and it so happens that just 2 weeks earlier, they opened a massive art exhibition at...
What is the palace called?
I couldn't hear what he said on that. Play it again.
Did he say the queer?
It sounded like the queer and nail, was it? Or?
Okay, let's see if...
I should have listened closer to that because I did question that and I forgot to go back on it. So.
Okay, here it
okay.
is.
But this is just another thing to add to the picture. So, of course, the G20, all the puppet tyrant Decepticons, all meeting up on October the 30th and the 31st in Rome on Halloween. Biden, Prince Charles, Boris Johnson, Macron, Merkel, all the losers together. And they had this, you know, big meal in this grand room. And I implied that it was unusual for all of this to happen on Halloween. And also the COP26 also starting on that Halloween date. But someone also now has brought this to my attention. The palace that they were all eating that meal in and were also hanging out in is called the Quirinal Palace. And it so happens that just 2 weeks earlier, they opened a massive art exhibition at the Quirinal Palace.
Yeah, it's called the Queer and Nail Palace.
Queer and Nail.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard it the second time. I thought I heard that the first time, but I wasn't sure. And when you played it, your audio, or it's my my headphones too, are quite, it has like the bass, you know,
okay.
on it. It's
okay.
too strong. So, but yeah,
sure.
you're right. That's it.
Okay.
That's
what
it
a weird
is.
Name. Anything with queer.
Yeah.
If you invite me to a dinner and the restaurant's called Queer Whatever, I'm saying I won't be showing up if it has to do with queers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's in Rome. It's in Rome.
Oh, look at that. Look at
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, not surprised.
They're all meeting with the Pope.
I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked that the queers
yep.
are there. Okay.
Yep.
It was an art exhibition of 200 works of art, some dating from the Middle Ages. And what do you think the theme of the exhibition was? It was all about hell. It was called Infernum. It says here, the exhibition at the Quirinal in Rome marks the 700th anniversary of Dante's death. It features more than 200 works from the Middle Ages to now, presenting hell in all of its forms, from demonic Renaissance depictions of bodies toasting in fire and brimstone to experiences of hell on earth, such as the concentration camps of the Second World War. Significant loans include a plaster cast model of the Gates of Hell by Auguste Rodin, conceived in the 1880s. It says here the Gates of Hell has mammoth dimensions, being more than 6 meters high and 4 meters wide. A special truck was needed to transport it from Rodin Museum in Paris to Rome, of which there are only 3 examples in all of Europe. So 200 works of art depicting hell on earth and hell outside of earth. And the exhibition is currently on, and it only opened just 2 weeks ago, before all of these puppet tyrants, leaders, came to Rome, meet the Pope, and have a big get-together for Halloween. And then all meet up at that palace where the Gates of Hell exhibition is on. So this, and again, you know, this is supposedly a celebration of Dante, who wrote the Divine Comedy. There was also the Paradise part, but they seem to just want to focus on the demonic side of it. And there were complaints about it. One magazine wrote, it says here, it is a source of dark thoughts that only hell was chosen for all the work of the comedy of Dante, whose writings were a sublime and arcane vehicle of transmutation for man up to the celestial peaks, where he is love that moves the sun and other stars. It then goes on to say, as if you really wanted to magnify and exalt the underworld more than the possibility of salvation of man. It also says, there are also those who consider the fact of representing symbolic an exhibition on hell at the Quirinal, which in the pre-unification era was the residence of the popes. And also of note that the exhibition started on October the 15th, which coincided with the entry into force of the Green Pass for workers. So again, this is just another example of what many people say, oh, it's just a coincidence. What with the constant appearance of 666 in Microsoft patent numbers, the House of Representatives COVID bill being 6666, the constant tie-ins with what's going on now with parts of the book of Revelation from the Bible, the way all of these governments are all suddenly, in the last 2 years, all working together, the Pope creating an Abrahamic house for all religions. They're trying to join everything together, like they want to make a one-world religion, like a one-world government. Passports being introduced everywhere, stopping people from traveling, stopping people from working, stopping people from making money, a bit like the Mark of the Beast. There's so many of these tie-ins. There's so many references now that I can't keep up with it all. I can't remember them all. You have to check the backlog of videos, you know. I know there are people out there who don't like it when I talk about these things. They say, stick to the facts. Stop going down this silly route. But this is connecting the dots. If you see the same thing come up time and time again, especially this, you must be crazy to not think there is no relevance to it. Many people have said this now, and it's becoming a cliche. This is a spiritual battle. There is a darkness and there is a lightness. I mean, you can feel the oppressive negative energy out there. It's tangible. That's why, you know, we need to look after our souls. Make sure we surround ourselves with positive energy. Create a tribe of like-minded souls who you can trust, who think like you, who ignore the fear these Decepticons are trying to push out into the world, and try and wake as many sleepers as possible. So look, stay strong, keep the faith, and as always, thanks for listening. Come and subscribe to the tribe at HugoTalks.com, a place for like-minded souls who don't follow the fake stream media.
Very interesting.
Yeah, when he said positive energy, he's doing that for a reason. In the UK,
yeah.
You can't say Christ is the only way.
Right,
but don't you find it funny that they have a literal gate of hell there at this? You know, I mean, it's not a coincidence. The Lord said the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church. And they have a literal gate, you know, of hell. That's amazing. That's, you know, that's amazing. And we understand the gates in Israel, you know, what that meant. We understand that. But I just found it amazing that they're creating, this replica of a gate of hell going back, you know, as something worshipped maybe years ago. And they're bringing it into this. And it's all about the darkness. Remember, this, what we talked about last week, what Alice Bailey hoped to accomplish for the New World Order is actually happening right in front of us. And remember the arts. That was a part of it. And so what you're seeing there is exactly a part of debasing the arts, you know. In there.
Sure.
So I found it fascinating. I could do a whole show on that guy. I mean, really, because he really gets some good information. And what's happening there, they're of one mind over here, honestly, or over there, with our leaders here. So it's, you know, it's the same agenda. It's just different countries.
Right.
How far they can push it. Okay, if you don't have anything more to say, we're going to get into our main audio. Antonio Gramsci, Cultural Marxism, Wokeness, Leninism 4.0. Now, last week we discussed if we should go, we were at 37, and you said I might push it back to 30. Do you still want to do that, or do you want to go with 37? Okay.
Let's do that because this guy is deep.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Orientation, sorry, gender identity and maybe well, sexual orientation, relied upon an analysis that saw sex, sexuality, and gender as inextricably linked together. They depend on one another in a way that's generally close to intersectional. Kimberly Crenshaw, though, deliberately injected intersectional thought into law where it wasn't previously. An intersectional thought, of course, is this idea that all oppressions are interlinked, everything's super complex, better to tear the whole thing down. All the way back to Horkheimer in 37, Gramsci had the same vision. He knew that this is what had to happen. And then the last one that I've left out as a domain of cultural production is most important. It's education. Gramsci was a huge believer in the idea that we needed to have working-class intellectuals, that the working class had to be educated, but not just educated. They had to be educated into a class consciousness. If we borrow off of Horkheimer, Horkheimer was talking about how traditional theory is kind of like science and philosophy and logic and, you know, even psychology. But then you have this critical theory that's kind of infused in everything and is basically activism for his utopian dream. And he's really clear. He says even that the simple-minded are doing traditional theory all the time. In other words, common sense. They're thinking. They're working things out. They're using logic. They exist in reality instead of pseudo-reality. But you have to teach critical theory. He's implying that critical theory is somehow higher rather than garbage. What you're actually doing, what he's actually admitting without, I think, realizing it, is that you have to indoctrinate people into critical theory. And Gramsci understood that this needed to be done in education. It needed to be done in working-class education in particular. And so you have a direct line from Gramsci into Brazil, Paulo Freire, in the 1960s, writing The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and basically wrecking the Brazilian education system, which still hasn't recovered as a result. And then Gramsci getting translated into English in 1970 and getting picked up by education activists like Michael Apple, eventually Henry Giroux, Ira Shore, and later Joe Kinchelow, some of these critical pedagogy guys that picked all this crap up. And their idea was that you had to use education to educate a first, earlier, class consciousness, then later, a critical consciousness. Critical consciousness would have been the way that Freire phrased it. So, and then that's become the main kind of thing. The modern word for critical consciousness, modern slang term, is woke. Being woke means you have a critical consciousness. Critical consciousness is the cultural Marxist reinvention of the idea of class consciousness, which is exactly the thing Marx was talking about. And so they understood that you had to educate the working class. In other words, you had to indoctrinate and reprogram in cult fashion the working class to create what they called what Gramsci referred to as working class intellectuals, so that they could express the proletarian view of oppression from within in an organic fashion. This is ultimately the basis for the long march through the institutions, and the main institution of relevance is education.
Now, this is interesting because, as you can see, the masses get educated, or let's say they get informed, not educated,
mm-hmm.
but they get informed mm-hmm. through the media. The
yeah.
media isn't telling the truth. The media is lying. So right. So they're getting brainwashed by the media. Then you go to the university. You pay an arm and a leg for one of your kids to go to college, and then the professor, what is he doing? Indoctrinating your kid, right? Turning your child into a zombie, a political zombie, a cult member, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Then you send them. If you have little ones, you send them to public school. And even in K-4, K-5, they're already indoctrinating them in critical race theory.
Yeah.
So then you send the people to church, the people go to church, and the pastor is a puppet of the powers that be. And what is he spewing?
Yeah.
The same garbage. Many times the pastor yeah. will have a politician come by.
Mm-hmm.
It was that pastor in Brooklyn, A.R. Bernard, who had the female governor of New York go there and talk about the vaccine, and she's telling the people, you are my apostles.
Yeah.
Go
yeah.
and spread the good news of the vaccine. What?
Yeah.
What?
Exactly.
Right? So everywhere you go now, every segment of society, someone's trying to reprogram you.
Well, I find that interesting that you picked that up, because in my notes, I said this is being done in your home through media, your workplace through your employer. They're
right.
doing it too, through
sure.
the educational system, the schools and universities, by the arts, that's your entertainment, and more importantly, in your church, by these wolves in the pulpit. That is
sure.
exactly what I had written down. We both observed the same thing. In what he said.
Right.
And another thing he said here, you're being taught critical theory. You have to understand, this is what I see. You're being taught. It's not something that would come to you naturally. You know, in essence, all your logic, your common sense, your critical thinking, all these things that you possess must be taken down to instill critical theory. You know, So that's, and all these different places are doing that. You know, my husband's at a point right now that in January they have told everyone, you get a vaccine or you don't have a job, to everyone
wow.
in there. I just told him, I said, you have a choice to make. Whatever you
sure.
choose to do, I'll support that. You know.
Right, right, right.
But I know what he's going to choose.
Right.
He's going to be
I
home.
Was, sure. sure. He's going to have one of those Snoopy shirts on. He's going to have one of those
yes.
Snoopy shirts. Yeah.
Please, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. No, listen, I was watching the Chicago Bears last night. They were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't watch
mm-hmm.
much football anymore like I used to, you know. But there was
yeah.
nothing else on TV, and I had seen Forensic Files. So I said, let me see what the football game is. And the quarterback for the Chicago Cubs, who happens to be an African-American, on the back of his
mm-hmm.
helmet, he had a label that said, and racism. And I'm saying
mm-hmm.
to myself, hasn't somebody told this fool that racism has ended? And somebody would say, how dare you say that? Well,
yeah.
We know that racism has ended because he's on the football field. He's black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Years ago, it was unheard of to have a black quarterback. The quarterback position is to be an intelligent man's position. Back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
black players were not thought of to be intelligent. So that's
right.
why they were never allowed to be quarterback. Because they
yeah.
they didn't have the IQ of a white man. I'm just speaking facts, right? I mean, So now when you look at the NFL today, more than half of the teams have a black quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, that position, now, you could be anything else on the team and be black, but quarterback, never. You could never be African-American and ever play that position. That is a thinking man's position, and you were thought too stupid to play the position. So here's this young quarterback, first year in the league. He's got a little thing on the back of his helmet and racism. And, you see, he's a moron. He's a moron. Because the fact that he is playing that position tells you that racism has already been defeated. Now, is it completely gone? No, because racism has to do with individual people and individual hearts.
Yes, yes, it
right?
does. Absolutely.
When you meet
Absolutely.
A skinhead... When you meet skinheads are rare. Let me say this. Skinheads are rare.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in every neighborhood. But when you meet one, okay, realize that that person is still a racist. Okay, but he's a very small
yep.
minority. The
yes.
fact that you were
yep.
drafted by the Chicago Bears, the fact that you are playing in the NFL and you're getting paid big bucks, the fact that you're black and you're at the quarterback position lets you know that things are better off race-wise.
Yeah.
So to say
yeah.
end racism is moronic. It just
yeah, because,
is.
You know, it's funny. I had the same kind of notes, too, on that. It's, you know, this is weird. But I
right.
had slavery down as an example. You weren't free to be who you wanted to be or to go where you wanted to go or own what you wanted to own back then, you know, during the times of
right.
slavery. You had no control of oneself, you know, within yourself. So
right.
I put down, what do they think is happening now? We're going back into slavery on a global basis, you know.
Correct.
I think the slaves would have said, any ancestors that were slaves would have said, run away from this, you know, this whole agenda.
Sure.
And if you think about the black church, you have pastors who may have had ancestors who were slaves, but now
sure.
they're the masters taking people into slavery, you know,
right.
woe to them.
They run the plantation.
Yes.
Right.
So your teaching was right on, right on target.
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
I got tired of saying the same thing week after week after week. These churches are nothing nothing more than plantations, right? So
that's right. Yep. And now you understand why, what they're doing in here. It was very revealing to me when Jeff Maples went up there and said, you know, they think they're positioning, these pastors are positioning themselves for a part in this because they understand what's going on, but it's going to turn on them. You know, when he said that, I thought, that's right. So many of these pastors know exactly what's going on. They know that they're putting people into slavery. They don't care that they're putting you back in slavery.
They don't care because they are enriching themselves.
Themselves, yes.
Right? At the expense of the people. The poor people in these congregations, they don't care. They don't care. They're wicked. They're wicked. So
it is.
Yep.
It is.
Absolutely. 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 All right, here's more.
The whole point of their intrusion into education was going to be the need for consciousness raising. Of course, the feminists were also deeply tied up with Marxist thought all the way from the beginning. They weren't all Marxists, of course, but many of them were. So Marxist thought has always infiltrated this, and you've seen feminist consciousness or consciousness raising being a major project with them as well. That's the idea of Gramsci's belief that there needs to be a kind of so-called working class intellectual. You know, the working class intellectual has class consciousness or critical consciousness and then is teaching that critical consciousness. He's been awakened to the nature of his own oppression as somebody that's in the working class or later oppressed group, as it came to be known. I would say, by the way, just as an aside, that original Marxism was about economics, obviously. You had the working class versus the proletariat, working class versus the bourgeoisie capitalists. And it was just all economic class, so you're caring about a class consciousness. Then later we had a critical consciousness that was arising, and that was really this cultural Marxism. I mean, Gramsci is the birthplace of cultural Marxism. What he's describing is applying Marx's conflict theory and other aspects of Marx's analysis and even the Hegelian form that Marx based his thought on, the young Hegelian form, to these aspects of culture. But you hear what he's talking about. You don't hear race. You don't hear sex. You don't hear sexuality. You don't hear gender. You don't hear that stuff. You hear religion, family, education, media, law, high culture, later low culture. You hear Theodore Adorno talking a lot about high culture, low culture, and then mid or pop culture. And the belief that Adorno had deriving from these same lines of thought was that the mid-culture or pop culture, and the postmodernists believe this too, were stealing away that resentment underneath the anger in the working class and keeping them satisfied. And so that they had to be, that basically pop culture had to be subverted to make people mad and to hate society rather than to have them be entertained. Sort of gross when you realize what they were doing. Okay, so there's a lot there, but this is basically the idea that Gramsci had. Education is the main place where this is going to happen. So you have literally the most influential and the most damaging aspects of this have taken place, first in our colleges of teacher education, then our universities, then our K-12 schools, and at this point you see that all of those are basically captured and all of those have to be taken back basically as quickly as possible by saying that no, teaching a critical consciousness, that's your cultural Marxist, I didn't finish that thought, I apologize, critical consciousness is not what we need to be doing. We need to be teaching people, as if we go back to Horkheimer's separation, traditional theory, we need to teach them how to be competent. We need to teach them how to think clearly. We need to teach them how not to hate their society and hate everything about it so that we can usher in some bogus utopia that exists only in pseudo-reality. Utopia literally means nowhere if you go to the Greek roots, but rather to understand things for real and to do real work. around them. So we need traditional theorists, not critical theorists. So just to back up and finish that thought, you had Marx was pure economics, and so he had class consciousness. Gramsci is your cultural Marxist, and they had this idea of critical consciousness. And now we have this woke thing, and it's all based on identity politics. Identity politics, by the way, isn't what happened in the 1960s in the civil rights movement. The term identity politics was coined by that same Combahee River collective I just mentioned, which was radical lesbian black feminists. I'm not kidding. Who got together? They were angry black lesbian women who are in the black liberationism, which is this whole thing. This is what this is. Liberationism is in essence what the cultural Marxism is about, liberation from all forms of oppression. I mean, Horkheimer uses the word explicitly in the essay I was talking about, in the exact context where all the oppressions are linked. So I refer to this, identity politics came from there. That term was coined in 1977 by that collective, and I refer to what's been happening since the 1960s when they infused identity, which has increased and became identity politics, in this critical style. When you hear the words identity politics, it is not civil rights movement, it is critical identity politics. This is identity Marxism. So we've gone from Marxism, which would be economic Marxism, to cultural Marxism, which criticized elements of high and low and medium culture, to identity Marxism, where they are twisting the knife in Western societies on their weakest point, which is matters of personal identity. And it's been very effective. They did the same thing, by the way, if you don't know, they did the same thing in China before Mao's Cultural Revolution and the decades leading up to that. Everything that you know about white privilege, they had a parallel concept of Han privilege, Han being the dominant race of China. Everything you know about white supremacy is the way the woke say it, the critical theorists say it. They talked about Han supremacy. They had the same freaking concepts. They had the same ideas even of fragility. The whole thing was all played out in the 20s and 30s, going into the 40s in China, to, in the Hegelian terms, aufheben their culture, to break down their culture in Gramsci's vision of cultural Marxism. The four olds in China were what had to be done away with. Old values, old ideas, old customs, old ways of thinking, something like that. The four olds, the Sujiu. And so they had to get rid of those. They had to break those down. That was the cultural Marxism. That's what happened in China. That's what's been happening in the United States since the 1960s as we've transitioned into this identity Marxism, because clearly it works. And clearly people who don't want to be racist, who don't want to be bigots, are low on the defenses against it, which is such crap, because we're the people who actually are in the moral high ground. And they've cooked up this bogus upside-down world where we've sacrificed all of our moral authority and moral high ground to them. Okay. So
in other words, they're using the same script today that they used in other places, and they're using it today because it worked back then. It worked. Mm-hmm. Everywhere it's been used,
yes.
It worked.
Yes, in China, what would you say it was, the Hun in China?
You're right, yeah.
Is it the Hunter?
Absolutely.
I'm going
by what he says, because I don't know anything about the Hun dynasty, or you know.
Right.
I'm just saying amen to what he's saying, because I'm completely clueless.
Well, he said everything in society, you know, if you think about it, he's saying everything in society must be taken down. Not only taken down now, you must embrace the hatred of society. That's something that I heard from that. So that's where the activists come in.
Right.
See, because the Marxists, they fuel hatred. You know, they put fuel on the flames of hatred. So it's not good enough just to take it down. You have to hate it. And in my mind, when I was thinking about the mark of the beast, when he said that, I thought, well, wait a minute. And I made a note. The mark involves two things. It involves the mark itself, but it also, you have to worship, you know, the beast.
Right.
There's two things to that. It's the mark and the worship. And with this, I was thinking about not only do you take society down, you have to hate your country, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, there's two different things that you have to do here. They teach you to embrace hatred in everything around you.
Right, right.
So I was just thinking that could be a part of that system. We must have been doing well in America to be attacked so bad, you know, because, you know, this is a place where people who were oppressed came to. They came to America to flee it, to flee oppression.
They're coming
now. But
now
we're becoming the oppressor.
Well, of course, that's a lie because we don't oppress people. In fact, right now, I think Biden wants to give some of the illegal aliens who came over the border, the Biden administration wants to give them $450,000 cash. When have you, listen, in all my years of working, if you combine all of my tax returns, which, by the way, is my money,
mm-hmm.
If you combine all of my tax returns over all of the years that I've ever worked, I don't think that when you put them all together, they have ever amounted to $450,000.
Right.
Here's a person who's never worked in this country, and now because they claim foul or the ACLU claims foul, we're going to give them $450,000. That's like me going to England and saying, you know what? England owes me $450,000 because I got there and they mistreated me. Mm-hmm. What kind of nonsense is that?
Well, the thing is that it's not the oppression of the people coming in. It's the oppression of, I mean, people fled here. But who is the government oppressing, really? It's oppressing its own citizens.
Right.
And allowing these other people coming in. Who's paying for that? We are. The citizens of the United States are going to pay. It's not about oppressing those who are outside the country, those who are coming in. It's about the government itself being the oppressor against its own people.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know.
Absolutely.
Stepping down
Absolutely.
On us. So that's what it's about. And we have to remember we have a mixture here. You have a mixture. That's why the title. Of
mm-hmm.
different things, and that's
sure.
what wokeness is, you know. So a lot of this did come from Black liberation theology. There's a lot of elements with that, and the reason is we know today feminism today is about LGBTQ rights. It's not the feminism of old. You know,
right.
for just equal rights, or I want to vote. You know, every time it amps up, we go into a different phase of feminism. This one is about LGBTQ rights, you know, the power of women and those rights. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's why it appears that much of the wokeness came from that theology and because of the people who pushed that, promoted that. Now, and it's big in society. So, you know, we see the mixture. And if you look at Revelation 17, 4 and 5, Babylon, there was a mixture. There's a mixture there.
Sure.
In that, you know, that is
a
mixture. That's Babylon.
Yep.
And that also, go ahead.
Finish. No, I was just going to say there's a mixture in everything now.
Yes. So is Babylon. In Revelation, and that's 17, 4, and 5. So if you go back to Jeremiah 51, 7, and look at literal, that's literal Babylon. You see?
Right.
You can go back as a reference to that and look at literal, and then we have the Babylon, you know, of Revelation 17, 4, and 5. But it's all about a mixture full of abominations.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
That's what
yep.
it is. And that's what
Absolutely.
We're seeing. We have three different movements going on here combined in this wokeness. We have cultural Marxism, wokeness, which is now what we're looking at, Leninism.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is they've taken the worst aspects of all of these and mixed it together to come up with this woke society that we live
in. Right.
So
We're in bad shape. We're in bad shape.
Yeah. Well, I was just reading an article yesterday when he was speaking at China. There's a U.S., our U.S. Navy, we named a warship after a child sex predator. China itself is building mock-up warships to test their missiles on, U.S. warships. So, you know, we're naming a warship after a child sex predator. And China's building warships, mock-up U.S. warships, just to test their missiles. Think about that.
Right.
You know? And he was heralded as an LGBTQ rights leader. His name was Harvey Milk.
Yeah. They did a movie of him. So, Sean Penn played him.
Yep. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Horrible.
Amazing.
Horrible.
Yep.
I tell you,
it's so scary.
It's so scary.
It is.
And let me tell you something. The lesbians, they're more militant, and they will knock out any man. Let's just say if you got into a street brawl, which we are not in the habit of doing, but if you got into a street brawl with a gay man or a lesbian, likelihood is you could beat the gay man, but the lesbian is going to beat the pulp out of you. So I'm just letting you know.
Who your enemy is out there.
No, yeah. Right, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, yep.
That's just to kind of give you a picture, though. To summarize, we've got Gramsci has this idea that the reason Marxist revolutions aren't happening is because of this thing he referred to as cultural hegemony. Cultural hegemony means that the culture itself has a kind of power that, if you will, protects. It's like a force field that protects from Marxist revolutions, from kind of their perspective, or that kind of sets the ways. It's like, what do people aspire to be? What do they value? And it creates a kind of power there. He believed that there are key pillars that have to be infiltrated to undermine cultural hegemony are religion and the church, family, education, media, and law. He believed that what you have to do is infiltrate these and create a counter hegemony. In other words, what I've called a pseudo-reality, a pseudo-real way of thinking that's enforced by a bogus logic I call a paralogic. I didn't make that up, that's following Jean-Francois Lyotard and the postmodern condition, or you call it parology, that uses a paramoral framework. In other words, it uses the liberationist, Marxist liberationist framework, an alternative view of society. And so you're going to build this counter-hegemony within the cultural institutions and just capture the sites of cultural production. That's the Long March to the Institutions, as it later got called. Worked very successfully for Mao, is working in the United States right now if we're not going to do something about it. He thought that the key of among all of these, besides maybe law, would be education. Education is the most powerful site. You see Mao created his Red Guard with the students. The roadmap is all here. Gramsci's an important figure. And the point is to indoctrinate and reprogram people who are in oppressed groups, whether that's so-called oppressed groups, whether that's the proletariat, whether that's racial minorities, whatever it is, and stoke their grievances. It is the politics of grievance, the same politics of grievance that Hitler stoked up, just in a different way. You get that into your head. I know that Hitler and the Marxists were not simpatico. They were not buddies. I know. It's the same politics of grievance, however. It's the same. He was awakening a German Aryan consciousness. They are waking up whether it's a class consciousness or an oppressed consciousness or a woke critical consciousness, and you're going to do that through education is a key thing. Another key idea that Gramsci saw then was this counter-hegemony he understood that there's kind of two worlds within society. He said that they're fuzzy, they overlap, it's complicated. It's not just, you know, oh, here are the political people and here are the civil people. But he broke the world basically into the state or the political society and then into the civil society. And his view was that the state uses force, and the second it's challenged, and it'll maybe make arguments or persuasion or coercion, and the second it's challenged, the fist will come out, which is funny given that whose symbol is the fist, right? And then that the civil society is the consenting society that has to do consent. What he believed, and this is why this is important, is that he believed that the political society is basically too difficult to assail when the cultural society supports it, or the civil society supports it through culture. So you have to wage political warfare by cultural means to undermine the cultural hegemony in civil society first, and then you can attack the political society either in a soft coup or, if that doesn't work, in a forceful revolution. The goal he had was that you want to create a regulated society that, as Marx dictated, that's a socialism, basically, a regulated society is a socialism. And I'm not using regulation in the sense like, oh, well, we don't want too much smoke going in there out of our smokestacks or poisoning the rivers. A completely state-controlled, regulated society, a command economy, really. And Marx's hypothesis was that that will eventually, once it lasts long enough, become redundant. People will realize they don't actually need the state to manage their affairs anymore, and ta-da, we get to our communist utopia located at nowhere. And of course, that regulated society part run by the party, the Leninist style party, is what's going to walk everybody into the blender when it doesn't work, because it really only serves the needs of a small percentage of the population at the expense of everybody else, and violates both economic and human law. So it's not going to work out. But this is how he saw things. It's very important to realize Gramsci's the idea that there's this two-stage revolution, where stage one is that you wage political warfare. The Chinese are waging political warfare against us right now, tapping into the political warfare that we're waging on ourselves from within. Why do you think they are tweeting things like the United States needs to get its racism problem under control? They know what they're doing. So political warfare first, which is ultimately culture war. It's the fact that we've been embroiled in a culture war for a long time, which I would actually say has been a second civil war for at least 5 years, but particularly it's come to a head this year. We may be actually in a cultural world war, more or less, because we have foreign actors. It's taking place all over the place, first of all, on the same battlegrounds, and we have foreign actors agitating along these lines. This was basically stage one of two of Gramsci's vision for how communist parties, remember he became a Leninist, communist parties could seize and gain control. If you want to know what's going on in the world right now today, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Lenin was Leninism 1.0, Stalin was Leninism 2.0, Mao was Leninism 3.0, woke is Leninism 4.0, Gramsci is the roadmap to how that works. We don't have to get too much more deep into a lot of Gramsci's thought. Gramsci was a historicist, which basically means that he followed Hegel's idea of the dialectic of history, which got translated in the early Marx into dialectical materialism, which is to say that history is going to march along a line of kind of progress. Although Gramsci was a very strict, or an absolute, as I think the phrasing is, historicist. And what that ultimately meant is that he believed that everything is located within its own historical context. As a progressive kind of person heading toward a Marxist utopia, he would, of course, seen the dialectic of history. And his belief was that following Marx was that we had to have the whole project was a project of what's called praxis. Praxis is the fusion of theory and activism. It kind of is a shorthand way to explain what that means. What that means, in other words, is what Horkheimer's talking about when he outlines what critical theory is. It is something that has kind of the utopia at the end vision, and there's your theory that's going to then criticize society for not living up to that utopia, and it's going to pick at every means it can to do it, following Gramsci and the Frankfurt School critical theorists, we're going to pick at culture, following the people after the war, starting with Marcuse, but adding in many of these other characters. We're going to do it according to identity, which got much worse in the 80s and 90s as the woke movement took flight, what we call applied postmodernism and cynical theories, which I wrote with Helen Pluckrose. So Gramsci's view was very anti-idealist to the point of being relativistic, that each period in history is kind of its own thing. So you can see how this kind of precedes the postmodern view, although I don't know quite how much influence yet Gramsci had on say, the structuralists like Althusser, who was Foucault's PhD advisor, and the kind of the birth of post-structuralism and what became postmodernism. You can also, for those who know, within the critical theory school, Frankfurt School, it also set up Adorno's negative dialectic. So, in other words, Gramsci was stricter than Hegel. Hegel believed in his dialectic work that we were going to have a concept, a thesis, if you will, followed by its antithesis, but I think the German term is Aufhebung for that, which is not quite the same as negating. It means to negate and to keep at the same time, or to kind of cancel but maintain. It's a very bizarre German word. So the idea would be that you're going to say somebody's wrong by saying that they weren't complete enough. And then at the other end of that process, you have a synthesis that becomes something bigger. So you take the original statement, you say, no, not quite, and then you come to something bigger and better. That's basically Hegel's dialectic. Marx believed that applied to society in the kind of progress of history, and Gramsci wasn't as idealistic as these guys, especially as idealistic as Kant would have been, or even as idealistic as Hegel would have been. But he believed that the praxis, taking action, doing this, becoming activist, doing cultural revolution is what actually makes it work. If you don't make it work, it won't work. And it's also why he is a Leninist, where you have to have a party that's going to usher it in. But it sets up, anyway, Adorno's negative dialectic. And Adorno's negative dialectic drops off the synthesis part. There's apparently no summary that's neat for what Adorno meant by his negative dialectic. But in short, since there's not one, I'll give you one. It means that we're going to have our thesis and we're going to have our statement that keeps it but tears it apart at the same time, our antithesis, and then we're going to leave it at particulars. We're not going to try to synthesize into something bigger and more complete. So it's a more tearing down process that Adorno was laying out. So you can kind of see, again, lots of parallels to postmodernism. So you can see how these things were going to be able to be fused later. Again, same kind of thing. He was against Marx's idea that there was this inevitability. The later Marx writing, especially in Das Kapital, that there's this inevitability of history to produce capitalism evolving into socialism and socialism evolving into communism, and therefore favored active revolution. And again, this is a two-stage thing. He criticized Marx as having kind of a naive economism, is I think what he called it. But this two-stage, first cultural, then political revolution, in order to install a Marxist, ultimately, utopia, or path toward utopia. But he was a Leninist, so you can see where it's really going. So therefore, he was against reform. He was against incrementalism. He thought that those things maintain too much of the status quo. They don't break hegemony. Instead, you have to dissolve and subvert those things, and thus replace them with the new thing in kind of revolution.
All right. Any comments to that point? This guy is getting deep. He's very knowledgeable. This guy knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I do. I think, you know, a great way to put it is what he said, it stoked the grievances. Like you're stoking a fire, you know?
Right. Sure.
If you don't conform to this, then the fists come out. But, and there's another good point in here is what he's saying is at first, how this starts out, there's a reason for the title here. Cultural Marxism starts. That turns into wokeness. That goes into Leninism 4.0. You see, we're being marched in. At the end of the day, it will end up Leninism 4.0. So all these
right.
are the combination. So that's one of the things that he's saying. It's a political, cultural. There's theory, activism, pseudo-vision, utopia. So
right.
I think we're past
and none,
the
and none of
post-modern.
It exists. None of that stuff
Correct.
Exists. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. That's their, by the way, you know, I think we've gone from postmodernism into neo-paganism, if not paganism.
Right.
But
right.
if you think about it, you know, if you think about cultural Marxism and then that moves to wokeness, which we're in right now, and that moves into Leninism 4.0, that's their, I'm thinking, that's their three-legged stool. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
They have a three-legged stool in this.
Sure.
So
sure.
is that it? Is that the three elements that take us, you know, march us in? I'm not sure. Just a thought that came to mind when he was saying that. So, you know, when he was
yeah,
talking about the...
Sure, we're close. I got to tell you, we're close.
Yes. Yeah.
We're very, very close. It's getting ugly.
Yeah. Well, one thing is for sure, they picked the worst part, each part of these, the worst part of each one of these ideologies, right? And they
right.
combined them into something so bad that I don't think anything will stop it except the return of Christ. You know, it's an evil mixture.
Right.
If they proceed with that. That's my thought
sure.
on it.
Sure. Yeah, nothing, listen. You had me read out of Revelation 17 where the kings
mm-hmm.
of the earth give the beast the power, and God
mm-hmm.
willed it. God made them do it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Nothing. This nothing's going to stop this. This is
right.
just, you know, this is the zit on the face getting bigger. You know, when you were a teenager, right, and you looked in the
mm-hmm.
mirror and you had a zit in the morning, and then by the time you got to school, your friend said, man, what's that thing growing? You got another head growing out of your face. And you said, what are you talking about? Yeah, you got
what
this zit,
analogy.
Man.
Right.
You got this zit over here. And that's what this is. It's not gonna get pretty.
Something has to usher in the return. Something ushers in, according to the Bible, the return of Christ. It gets so bad that Jesus steps in to stop it and to take over. It's done then.
Right.
Humanity had gotten to the point, I mean, if we go back to the days of Noah and we look, humanity had gotten to the point that it was so bad. Think about how bad it had to be for
sure.
God to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
But the remnant, you know?
Right.
So, the same thing happens again. It happens again. We don't know for sure exactly what was going on during the times of Noah, exactly. But we do know that this is so evil that it will usher in, I think, the return of Christ. Because it gets worse, and something brings that, according to Revelation. It gets
mm-hmm.
bad. That mixture, the cup gets
sure.
full of abominations, and it brings Christ, you know, that's our
yep.
hope.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, so the gates of hell will not stop the church.
No, it won't. It won't,
nope.
but it's the gates of hell to stop in America. I'll tell you, it
yeah.
won't stop the church, but it's
yep.
stopping America in its tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And like I said, kind of just to wrap up with Gramsci's views, He was actually anti-objective because of his strict historicism, his absolute view that everything is contingent upon the historical conditions in which it occurs. There is no technically objective location or truth. Everything is just a historical contingency. This, of course, was a key idea within Foucault, a key idea within the postmodern thought. He got accused of being a relativist for it and denied that, but he said that there's absolutely no objective universe outside of human history. The same line, the same idea is reflected in Horkheimer, in his outline of critical theory, and traditional and critical theory is the name of the essay, 1937. More or less, this is one of the quotes I did write down from Horkheimer. Modern theoreticians of knowledge do not deny the importance of historical circumstance. So again, he's saying that all knowledge is rooted in historical circumstance. Even if among the most influential non-scientific factors, they assign more importance to genius and accident than to social conditions. So you can hear in Horkheimer that the underlying social conditions, in other words, some kind of Marxist analysis, is what really bears on how we understand what is and is not true, what constitutes knowledge and what does not constitute knowledge. He says the same, and this is Horkheimer, we're not talking Gramsci here, but another one, the self-knowledge of present-day man is not a mathematical knowledge of nature, which claims to be the eternal logos, but a critical theory of society as it is, a theory dominated at every turn by a concern for reasonable conditions of life. And those reasonable conditions of life, of course, are going to be defined by Marxist theory. That actually is the first mention of critical theory Horkheimer gives so in that essay. So it is that a critical theory is one that is interested in making sure that, to quote, it is a theory dominated at every turn by a concern for reasonable conditions of life. In other words, we're no longer going to be concerned with what's true. We're going to be concerned with what creates reasonable conditions of life, according to somebody who literally says that it has to be gauged against the utopia as its North Star, and that utopia is going to be Marxist. So when I say that there's this no objectivity view within Gramsci, you hear it again in Horkheimer. It's explicit, even in this stupid 2 + 2 = 5. They even all summer, it's reverberating again now, explicitly saying that the point of arguing that 2 + 2 = 5, which is ludicrous, it's not true in any universe, is to dismantle the idea of objective truth. Okay, so all the way back, you see this in Gramsci. Everything's historically contingent. You see it in Horkheimer 10 years later. These are the ideas that objectivity is bogus. Everything's historically contingent, and the view is, the religion is at the end of history we achieve the Marxist utopia. That's the end of history. There's no more progress to history at that point because we've achieved the harmonious utopian state. We've created God's kingdom on earth. The millennium is fulfilled. That's what this is. This is actually a religion, and Gramsci was one of its greatest theologians. And he's been very effective, and so he's a very important character to understand. Antonio Gramsci, again, Italian Marxist who was jailed by the fascists in 1926, wrote a very important series of books called his prison notebooks. It's actually pretty long. He wrote those while he was in prison. They tried to silence him by sending him to prison, and that totally backfired. Translated into English in 1970. Apparently translated into Portuguese or something somewhat earlier. I don't know what language Ferreri wrote it in or read it in, but at any rate, became the basis for all of our critical education theory that dominates all of the schools in the West now. By the early 1980s, this is the long march through the institutions laid out. It's the same one that Mao used. And again, to quote Gramsci, maybe his most famous quote, socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. That was his view, and this is the character upon which so much of the left's world has turned. He is the one who, in some sense, after the revolutions, the attempted revolutions, save the Russian one, failed, this is the man who reinvigorated that socialist religion, who brought it back from the edge of death by understanding and creating cultural Marxism and using cultural Marxism to lay the groundwork that allowed for the success of, as I've called it, Leninism 3.0, which was executed by Mao Zedong in China, and Leninism 4.0, which is being foisted upon the rest of the world, especially the West, right now under the brand name woke. So lots to look into, lots to think about, lots to understand, but this has been in the works for a while. This is the thing we're up against.
Now this audio gives context to what we are experiencing here in the United States.
Yep.
And how this has been in the works for a long time. This just didn't mm-hmm. appear. It appears in different names, but it's one agenda, and that is the religion
yep.
of socialism designed to replace the religion of Christianity.
Correct. And you
yep.
and one of the things you find interesting, this is atheism. However, they have a belief system. What they say is what an atheist would say, like 101,
right.
you know? However,
right.
they have a following. They have a doctrine. They have an eschatology.
Sure.
You see? So
right.
at the end of history, in their world, is a Marxist utopia. That's God's kingdom on earth is
right.
the Marxist kingdom. World domination. That makes them a religion, and yet they say they don't believe, you know, in
mm-hmm,
God.
Mm-hmm.
But yet,
right.
so this is a religion in itself. And I'm glad that he brought that up about religion, because it is. It is. And is it the one world religion? We'll have to wait, see. We
yeah.
will see. That's the way it's, projecting
well, with this,
to me.
Yeah, what this idea fosters is the merging of politics and religion.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So when
yeah.
the Antichrist comes, what does the Antichrist do? He merges politics and religion. We believe in separation of church. We believe in separation
mm-hmm.
of church and state.
Correct.
We push the separation of church and state. We don't want the state putting their nose in our business. We want their nose out of our business. But in the
correct.
End time, Antichrist will merge church and state.
Yes. That's right.
He will be he will be the
we
king.
The Antichrist and the false prophet. Yep.
Right. There you go. There you go. So, thank God that Jesus returns, cracks the sky.
Yep. Yep.
Grabs the devil and the false prophet and the Antichrist and throws them in the lake of fire and
mm-hmm.
And prevents this world from becoming totally corrupt. He saves it.
Yes.
He saves humanity in more
well,
ways
my
than
thought
one.
In this, I thought about this right now, about the taking down of the Constitution in the United States. We have a law against discrimination, against race, disability, age, But now they're saying you cannot work if you don't have a vaccine. So I want you to think about what about a religious and religion in there, race, age, disability,
mm-hmm.
religion is in there. So what if your religion prevents you from doing that under the discrimination? Act. They can't
right.
discriminate, but yet
right.
religion is in there. But yet, if you don't work or if you don't get the vaccine, you can't work. So they are discriminating against
sure.
Someone's religion by saying even if they don't believe that they should take it or want to take it, they have to. So that's discrimination. What would stop them from discriminating against race, disability, and age next once
right.
they take down the work? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is taking
yeah.
down the Disability Act. You know,
yeah.
This is taking down or discrimination. They can go after anything if they can get the religion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They can
yep.
then go against age, disability, race. You know, that opens the door to a lot of things. If you
sure.
have to be vaccinated to do things, it opens the door to a lot of things that they can do.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and they can do that regardless of what you believe, you know, in your religion.
Right.
If they can take down that part of it, they can take down the race part, they can take down, you know, the age, you know, the different laws like that. And I think that's what they're trying to do at the end of the day. I really think that, you know.
Right, right.
So, anyway, okay, we have audio 3. I have a short audio here. It's 4 minutes and 15 seconds. I found this interesting because I think it's another one Hugo found. But this is a movie clip from a movie called Early Warning. And this was used as a tool for evangelism years ago, in 1981. Okay?
Okay.
This is very telling. Now, I want you to remember something with this group. You know, things that are hidden, they're hidden in plain sight. That's their motto. They don't really hide things. It's in plain sight. We can see it everywhere.
Right.
So it's things are hidden in plain sight. They're right before us. This was from 1981. So it's only 4 minutes. If we could play this.
Okay.
Really interesting.
Hello, you're listening to Hugo Talks. Just a quick video here. I've got this weird clip that I come across last night from a movie from 1981 called Early Warning. It's labeled as a Christian film. It's about the end of the world. I haven't watched it, but I've seen this clip. And, well, it says it all, really. Check it out and let me know what you think in the comments.
Since our last meeting, we've made tremendous progress. And I'd like to say that most of the credit goes to our extremely efficient International Research and Development Committee. I would like to thank each and every one of you for your hard work and dedication to our cause. In reviewing this year's progress, let me say that we have been highly effective in conditioning the people's minds to accept our solution to the world's problems. The energy crisis here in the United States was exceptionally successful worldwide, and we expect similar success with our upcoming food shortage. Our labor leaders have made great progress by causing confusion and work stoppages in all areas of the world. Financially, the dollar is being devalued.
Let's stop it right there. That's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Isn't that mind-boggling? 1981.
Right, sure.
The movie's out there, too, on the Internet, by the way.
Sure. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Food shortages, work stoppage. Wow. That's like
yeah,
a COVID playbook.
Then.
That's a COVID
yes.
playbook.
Yep.
Okay.
International Research and Development Committee. I would like to thank each and every one of you for your hard work and dedication to our cause. In reviewing this year's progress, let me say that we have been highly effective in conditioning the people's minds to accept our solution to the world's problems. The energy crisis here in the United States was exceptionally successful worldwide, and we expect similar success with our upcoming food shortage. Our labor leaders have made great progress by causing confusion and work stoppages in all areas of the world. Financially, the dollar is being devalued even faster than we could have hoped. Politically,
they're doing that right now.
Yep. This was an evangelical tool, you know, back in 1981
right.
to warn
sure.
the people in evangelism. Think about
sure.
it.
Sure. Sure. Well, again, everything the guy said thus far, the devaluing of the dollar, you go right now, you listen, you go to a bank, you say, you go to any store, any bank, they're telling you,
mm-hmm.
Please bring change when you go to the store,
mm-hmm.
because the banks don't have change. They don't have quarters. They don't have dimes.
Right.
You know, they don't have rolls the way they used to.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get change. My wife the other day, she says, I need to go to the ATM. I took her. She says, that machine is out. I said, get used to it, honey. She said, that's what
yeah.
you were talking about? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So we had to drive around to another place to get an ATM machine. That's what they're doing. So
yep.
find it very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The public has lost total confidence in any form of government. The threat of universal war is a daily possibility.
Well, what are they talking about now? China wants to attack Taiwan.
Yes.
Right? That's every day now, every day. China's planes
yep.
are going over Taiwan. Will the United States defend Taiwan? That's every day. Every
yeah.
day.
As you know, we ourselves do not need to hold any visible office of leadership. As a matter of fact, it's better that we do not.
Like Fauci. Fauci doesn't hold
an office. Unelected officials.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, who's Fauci? Fauci, I mean, he's a little troll. He's a little gremlin. That's what he is.
What about our health departments? They weren't elected.
Right.
And, you know,
sure.
the local health department.
Right.
OSHA.
They control. Yeah.
Yeah.
They control.
I'll tell you
okay.
what, this film's right on.
Oh, let me tell you. This is more on point than any prophecy of Ibn R. Jordan or Brian Kahn put together or Kat Kerr.
Exactly.
I mean, Kat
That's
Kerr's
right.
all over the place. She's missing everything.
Yes,
right?
exactly.
She's
heaven.
Exactly. she's even missing her appointments at the Pink Beauty Parlor.
Yes.
Okay.
If we control the finances, news media, food, transportation, energy, we control everything. It is important that you, as world leaders...
Food, energy, transportation, infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
medicine, they control everything.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Keep our program before your countrymen. With our World Bank and computer program operational, we now have the capacity to control the financial affairs of every human being on Earth by giving each person his own computer number. Anytime his number is used, we would know his financial situation at once. He could not buy or sell anything without his computer number. It will simplify their lifestyles tremendously.
Wow, Biden, if you have a transaction of over $600... Biden's going to know about it. This is a spooky movie, let me tell you.
I'm telling you, they used this to evangelize in 81. I said, yep, that's it, because, happening. I think it's spooky because it was 1981, and
right.
you look at this playing out. We're watching this play out right
We're
now.
We're living it. We're living it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can use this for evangelism today.
Yes, exactly.
This movie would be more effective today than in 1981, because in 1981 said, that's baloney. That's nonsense. That's never going to happen.
That's a conspiracy. That's what they would have said.
Right. Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
The end result will be a one-world monetary and government system that we alone will control. Yes.
What about the people who forget their number, or their cards are lost or stolen?
We've made provisions for that. By using this laser imprinter, we can painlessly and permanently affix the person's number to the back of his hand or his forehead if he so desires. The numbers would be easily read by this new ultraviolet scanning equipment. For the purposes of demonstration, I've had such a number imprinted on myself. Once this number is imprinted, it cannot be lost nor can it be changed. Now, are there any questions?
What about the individuals who refuse to have this number implantation?
We expect some minor resistance, especially from highly motivated religious groups. But eventually, hunger will cause even the most zealous to conform to our program.
Mr. Chairman, I am concerned about the situation in the Middle East.
We've given Russia and Israel a great deal of consideration. Russia is, as you probably already know, considering an invasion of Israel in order to obtain a Mediterranean seaport. Well, our policy is to support such a move and supply Israel with the necessary nuclear weapons to fend off such an attack. The mental conditioning of the Israelis is he has nothing to lose and subsequently will attack the Russians before they can get their planes off the ground. Gentlemen, I believe that within a year, two at the most, our one-world government will be a reality. If we continue on our present course, it is my opinion that we could present the devil himself as a world leader, and the people would accept him.
Wow. Pretty spooky.
Wow. Spooky. Wow. Get me saved in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Right now, I think it's a good clip to give to say, okay, here's what's going on. You know?
Yeah, I gotta watch the movie. I gotta watch it. Now my interest is peaked. Now I wanna see the movie. Where is it? On YouTube?
Yeah, I think the whole movie's on there. They were afraid somebody's saying they're gonna take that movie off. I think the movie's called Early Warning. And I saw where somebody said that'll get wiped off real quick, the internet. You know.
Right.
Yeah, it's called Early Warning, and it was, you know, they used that to evangelize people years ago. Hugo said, I think it's a Christian movie. I think he knows it is. So if you notice, Hugo knows a lot about the Bible.
Sure.
You know, so he understands the Bible. It's just what he can say and what he can't say and get away with.
Right.
He had Hugo talks, and then he had Hugo talks again because he lost it.
He lost that channel?
Yeah, the first one was Hugo talks, and that was gone, and then it's Hugo talks again, and then it was what the other one was. It was funny. I mean, then he had this other one, Hugo something.
Yeah, one is going to...
I'm going to tell you...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
the Antichrist is going to say Hugo talks too much. Right?
That's what they're trying to say right now.
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
The funny part of this is a little story, too. Hugo posts, this stuff all the time. And, you know, I sub to him, of course. I think we'll do a show and just let Hugo talk, okay?
Right,
while
he
can. Before they take him away, wherever they're going to take him. One of the people who he got the attention of was Eric Clapton.
Okay.
Eric Clapton had the vaccine. The first time he had a bad reaction, and he went and got the second vaccine, and he's not sure he'll ever play again. Guitar.
Really?
Right? And he was doing, yeah, he has all kinds of problems now. So he was talking on a show, and he said, oh, I listened to Hugo, and I think there's something, a conspiracy going on here. It's like his eyes were opened a bit, you know?
Right.
And he
right.
said, and knowing what I feel, and all of a sudden he's reevaluating what he did, you know, the decisions, and of course
sure.
physically, he's not been the same.
Wow.
You know? So, and he's speaking out, and I think he did a concert for people who were unvaccinated. You know, he's
okay.
very against this right now. So it, usually with celebrities, you know,
yeah, yeah.
they usually side with the other. He's not. So
right,
who knows
right.
at the end of the day. But
mm-hmm.
he did hear Hugo. And I found
right.
that amazing how he found Hugo. Maybe because it was all the problems he was having, you know, physically and trying to do research of what went wrong. He just
yeah.
went along with the crowd and look what happened. You know,
sure.
he said he can't use his hands or anything. So
that's crazy.
I have a funny story about that. My husband, when he went over to, you know, I'd have to go back to England and I had to be here, he would just give me, he might have been, you know, going from England to France, working on something, and he would call
right.
me and he would have to call Colette. And he got the operator to say one time to me, he said, from Britain, she says, you have a Colette call from someone who loves you. And I said to the operator, is it Eric Clapton? She says, no. Thanks a lot.
Yes.
I said, okay, I got to go.
Right. Right.
We just do.
That's funny.
But
that's
how
funny.
He ever got her to, you know, this is back when
sure.
you had to call, collect, and go through an operator. But
yeah, yeah,
she
yeah,
says,
yeah.
And this is a British operator. She says, you have a call. From the United Kingdom, from someone who loves you. I said, oh, is it
mm-hmm.
Eric Clapton? Well, she burst out laughing.
Right, right, right.
No, love,
right.
I don't think so.
Wow, wow.
Yeah,
those are the good old days when you had to do collect calls and you can hear the operator saying, will you accept the call, you know?
Yeah, that was a lot yeah. of money.
Sure.
To talk to
sure.
the one you love was a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And a letter. What was the letter? 3 weeks getting there? You know.
Sure.
Terrible.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie.
Amazing.
I gotta check this movie out. This thing's piqued my interest now.
I might send. I'll try to find it and send it over to you if you want. I mean, I
please
can
do.
Look.
Please do.
I think I was looking at it, and it looked like a full movie was out there. So because
yeah.
I was short on time getting my show ready, I didn't have time
right,
to fool
right.
around, you know.
Right, right.
So thank you very much for getting all the audio in today. I thought it would be extremely difficult because, you know, this was so jam-packed with
right.
so much information that I thought we'd have a difficult time. But, wow, you did it.
Yeah,
good
you
job.
Go, you go. Hugo did two wonderful audios today. He did two
yeah.
that the queer thing of the first one, the queer dinner, and then this last one, boy, I'm
yeah.
thinking now. I'm saying, wow, 1981, somebody was
yeah.
thinking back then. Somebody was prophetic back then. You know, we're talking
yes.
about really being prophetic, not stupid prophetic like today.
Correct.
So,
correct.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, our time is up now, Saints. Now, remember, next Thursday, Sister Marie is going to be here at 1 o'clock next Thursday, not Tuesday. So, my
mm-hmm.
dear sister, you have the last word. Thank you for this wonderful show. Of course, this guy
Thank
was
you.
Brilliant, and Hugo was the cherry on top. So,
oh,
you have
thank
the last
you.
Word.
That's sweet. Thanks. Well, we just thank the Lord. I mean, we need to stand strong in the faith and trust the Lord. It will come to an end. He will stop this. And, you know, We just need to keep the faith and stand strong in him. So thank you for listening. Maybe we'll do Hugo. I think we'll do some Hugo. We'll let him talk next week and give us some idea what's going on his way. Thank you again. We'll see you next Thursday. Have a great day. Bye.
Even though I was